Hi there.
Welcome to McMahon's Pastry Palace.
I've heard good things about your bake shop, so I thought I would...
It's called Pastry Palace.
Yes, I know that. I was just... You know, this is a bake shop.
No. A bake shop is what my dad used to run. This is a pastry palace.
Okay, right. Well, I just...
This is pure pastry entertainment.
Right. Hey, what's that?
Oh, well, that's our special feast incarnate. Double chocolate F5 layer cake. But I'm sorry, we only serve that 4 times a year.
Oh, all right then. Well, I'll have a piece of the Brian fudge cake, please.
The Brian fudge cake, huh? A decent, if not unspectacular, choice. I've got something even better. How would you like to try the Samoan caramel twist?
No thanks. I think I'm going to stick with the Brian fudge cake.
Come on, pal. No one really likes the Brian fudge cake, and the portion is way too small.
Look, I'm sure the Samoan cake is perfectly fine. In fact, I might even come back and have it next week. But I really just want the Brian fudge cake, okay?
Now look here, you lazy millennial son of a bitch. You're gonna like this damn Samoan cake because I know what's good for you, damn it!
Screw you! I don't want any of your Samoan cake. In fact, I hate Samoan cake. I'd rather eat dog shit.
Get out of my shop!
Don't tell me what to do!
Get the hell out of my shop!
The moral of the story, kids, is that it's not the cake's fault that the chef is an asshole.
I heard that!
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street!
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat! You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
Thanks to Steve Matthews for the idea for that intro there. This is the Super Bowl weekend edition of the award-winning Solid Monster Sounds Off, episode 367. And no, I did not misspeak. I decided to push my YouTube review of the Royal Rumble, Royal Fumble, as I called it, to our regular feed and call it episode 366 because the demand was such that it just made sense for me to do that, and my numbers were through the roof. So this is episode 367 here for Saturday, January 31st, 2015. I am the Solemn Monster. By the way, my Super Bowl prediction, just to get it out of the way up front here, Patriots by 4, 24-20. That's my Super Bowl prediction. I am very happy to announce that the Sound Off won big in the 2015 Wrestling Radio Awards. The winners were announced last night. You guys came through. The Sound Off won Show of the Year in the Wrestling Radio Awards. We also won for Host of the Year, so we cleaned up very nicely. Thank you to everybody who took the time to nominate us, everybody who took the time to vote for us. I've heard from people who never even heard of the Sound Off before, who were listening to it for the first time, who like what they hear, they dig it, and that was really the whole point and why it was so important to me to kind of get that vote out and get the word out, and we were able to do that. First time nominated, first time winning, very cool feeling, so thank you again to everybody who helped out with that. And that dovetails nicely into one more awards plug here. We are in the home stretch. Nominations are still open for the podcast awards. They have to be in by this Monday, February 2nd, so you have until Monday. If you have not already nominated the Sound Off, to please do so. You can go on podcastawards.com, very simple URL. Take 2 minutes, head on over there, scroll down under sports, and you can nominate Solid Monster Sounds Off. You'll have to just type in the full name, as under sports for Sports Show of the Year. Also, make sure you put our URL in there, thesolidmonster.com. You can also nominate the Sound Off under the People's Choice category if you so choose. You're not allowed to nominate one show in multiple categories other than People's Choice and then one other one. So feel free to write our name in there as well and put our URL. Then just scroll down to the bottom. You'll have to fill in your name and your email address in case they want to verify your vote, and then click submit. And that's it. You're only allowed one nomination, so make it count. And with your help, we can get nominated in the Podcast Awards as well. So head on over to podcastawards.com for that. Thank you to everybody who continues to sign up for Audible using our URL, audibletrial.com/solemonster. You have over 150,000 audiobook titles to choose from. You can try out the service right now for free, no cost to you, for 30 days. If you use our URL, just plug it in, and then from there you have to go through the sign-up process. Once you do that, you get yourself one free audiobook that you get to keep no matter what, whether you stick with it for the 30 days and beyond, if you quit early, whatever the case may be, you can cash in one free audiobook. Consider it my money in the bank briefcase to you. Whatever book you want, they've got tons of titles up there, wrestling and non-wrestling. So go to audibletrial.com/solemonster for your free audiobook right now. Thank you for everybody who donated via PayPal. TheSolemonster.com is the place to do that. You'll see the PayPal box on the right-hand side. Big thank you to Doomsday, Donde Page. And really, thank you. That was very generous, what he gave this week. Razorblade Trevor Johnson, Yvonne Bruiser Balak, Zach House of Pain Holker, Demonic De'Evan Laney, Light 'Em Up Lamont Ambler, and The Punisher, Lorenzo Manning. Thank you guys very much for your generous donations. And again, you can always make one on thesolemonster.com. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. Pro Wrestling Tees, we've got a couple of new shirts up. Of course, our Shitty the Announcer name tag shirt, which a lot of you guys, I know, found very amusing. That is up in the store right now. We also have our brand new No Distraction Roll-Ups Tee. I want to start a movement with this thing. You can wear this in public anywhere you want to, but the idea is that you would wear it to the shows to make your voices heard. No more distraction roll-ups. I actually got something fun planned for this Monday, so you'll want to stick to my Twitter to find out more about that. But the shirt's up in the store right now, so head on over there, prowrestlingtees.com/solemonstersoundsoff, and tweet me your photos. A lot of you guys get your shirts. Some send me photos, some don't. Put the shirt on, send a photo. I'll be more than happy to share it with everybody else and retweet it. At Solemonster is my Twitter handle. The Royal Rumble was last Sunday on pay-per-view and the WWE Network, although if you did order it on pay-per-view, then WWE basically told you that you were an idiot, because that's what they do now. They mock the people who spend $55 on their pay-per-views, which I think was just piling on, because you got to know those people felt like idiots anyway after that show was over for spending $55 on it. When I did my review that went up earlier in the week on YouTube, and again, I pushed it out a few days, actually not a few days, later that day to the feed, so everybody by now should have heard it, I made the comment that I couldn't go thumbs down on that show because I just couldn't bring myself to give a thumbs down to a show that had a championship match like that, so I gave it a thumbs in the middle. I'll stick to that, although I have revised my opinion about something else. As far as the Royal Rumble, I made my thoughts very well known. I did not like the Royal Rumble. I did not like the Royal Rumble finish. And it wasn't so much that Roman Reigns won and Daniel Bryan lost. It was the poor storytelling. It was the lack of any real storytelling at all. Any real drama other than, ooh, how bad are the fans going to crap on this match? To me, that was the only real drama to the match. How badly will the fans turn on this match? And it was the element of unpredictability that they killed the moment that Bryan got knocked off that apron so early in the match. And in such an anticlimactic way. I said in my review, I could not go as far as to say it was the worst Rumble match of all time because there have been some other stinkers. But upon watching the Rumble a second time on Monday night, because they re-aired the whole thing for free on Monday Night Raw, which we're going to talk about in a second. Upon watching it a second time, I can safely say now this was the worst Royal Rumble match I have ever seen. This was the worst booked Royal Rumble match of all time, and that in and of itself makes it the worst Royal Rumble match of all time. And there have been some other lame Rumbles, you know, 1993, I just talked about that. That does not hold up well when you go back and watch that match. 1999, I was not a big fan of the 99 Rumble at all. In fact, that's one of my least favorite Rumble shows of all time, and least favorite Rumble matches of all time. But at least in the 99 Rumble, there was a story going into and coming out of that match involving Stone Cold Steve Austin, the most popular babyface in the company, and Vince McMahon, the evil owner. Now, the finish was not satisfying. Vince McMahon wins the Royal Rumble, but you know what? Not a single person in their right mind thought that Vince McMahon was going to WrestleMania to headline that show and fight for the championship. Everybody knew that somehow, some way, Steve Austin was going to end up in that main event and probably was going to win the title, and that's exactly what happened. Everybody got the payoff they were looking for when he beat The Rock at WrestleMania. So I can't sit here and tell you that that Royal Rumble match was the worst. Not anymore, anyway. because there actually was drama to it. People wanted to see Austin get his hands on McMahon in the worst way. So they had Austin number one, McMahon number two. Both guys were there in the end. The fans were going crazy. It wasn't until the finish that they were let down, which is exactly the same thing they could have done here. Instead of giving the fans the chance to turn on half the Rumble match, or more than half the Rumble match, and just maybe save their booze for the very end, they decided, nah, we gotta get this guy out of here as quickly as possible. And that paved the way for the reaction that you saw, and it made for the worst Rumble match I've ever seen. And it wasn't just the fact that the fans booed. Every other little story they could have told in this Rumble, everything, whether it was the stuff with the Wyatts, the stuff with Miz and Mizdow, which I figure, I hope at least, that they're saving maybe for the Battle Royal at Mania instead. Maybe that was the idea behind it. But it's like every little thing they could have done, every interesting character that came in that the fans were behind, you know, was out within 2 minutes. I mean, everything about this was just head-scratching in every sense of the word. So again, I mentioned 93, I mentioned 99, even last year. In 2014 with Bautista, none of those Rumbles have ever frustrated me or angered me the way that this one did. And where it had the chance to be one of the best they've ever done, and we ended up with one of the worst, that's amazing to me that we can go from such, you know, high hopes to the lowest of lows. It's not as though going in you knew, oh, this is going to suck. How bad is it going to be? No, it was, this could actually be pretty damn cool, and it was anything but cool. The people I watched it with were angry. I was angry. The fans in the building were angry. Twitter's always angry, but they were even more angry than usual. Even Steve Austin couldn't believe that they did what they did. So yes, worst Rumble match I've ever seen. And one of our listeners, Khalif, made a very good point. You look back at the Final Four 10 years ago in the 2005 Royal Rumble match, which was a damn good match, one of my favorite Rumbles. And you got a glimpse of the future of that company with that Final Four. You know, you had Batista, you had John Cena, both of whom were very over, Edge, and Rey Mysterio, who were more established even than Batista and Cena at that point. But Mysterio and Edge would go on to much bigger things, you know, the following years. So you had that Final Four. That's a hell of a Final Four right there. Fast forward 10 years, you've got Roman Reigns and Rusev in there with Big Show and Kane. And you got Big Show and Kane throwing guys out left and right like they're sacks of garbage. And then they start fighting each other. And that moment, I think, right there is just the definition of everything that is wrong with the WWE. You get to the end of this Rumble match, almost an hour in, and you end up with Big Show and Kane fighting each other, throwing shots at each other and shots to the ribs, you know, trying to do a double choke slam. And it's just, really, this is 2015, and this is what we're seeing here at the end of this Royal Rumble match. The exact opposite of what everybody wanted to see. And it's no wonder that things turned out the way they did. It's no wonder people booed The Rock. Never would have thought people would have booed The Rock. I mean, they cheered him at first, but that's not why he was there. He was there for the big endorsement of Roman Reigns, and they booed. And even The Rock could not save Roman Reigns on this night, and it's not hard to see why. So when I look back at the Royal Rumble, like I said in my review, I just look back at an event that had a lot of promise, that was well on its way to being one of the more memorable Rumble shows ever after that Triple Threat match, which was awesome. And I can't say enough good things about it. And it was quite depressing to see how that pay-per-view ended. What was not depressing for WWE, they claim they hit their 1 million subscriber goal for the WWE Network this week. On Tuesday, they announced they had surpassed 1 million subscribers, driven mostly by a successful free November promotion, the UK launch, and according to them, significant additions for the Royal Rumble and also the day after the Rumble. They didn't announce that part, but apparently a lot of people signed up for the network on Monday, the day after the Royal Rumble show. So successful was that November free promotion that they're doing it again. And in the month of February, you can subscribe to the WWE Network for free if you are a new subscriber, which means you get Fastlane for free. But who gives a shit about Fastlane? You can get NXT TakeOver for free. February 11th is the next NXT show. It's coming up very soon, and that is definitely worth going out of your way to see. I will say, I was surprised that they hit that number so soon. When I did my predictions for 2015, I did them back in December on the Sound Off. And I've done pretty well with those predictions so far. I said Daniel Bryan would be back in time for WrestleMania. This was before he actually came back, and he was. I said Randy Savage would go into the Hall of Fame, which most people figured, I think, after Steve Austin did that podcast with Vince McMahon. And sure enough, Savage is going into the Hall of Fame. I said Bully Ray would be a surprise entrant in the Royal Rumble, and he was. And I said that NXT would soon begin touring outside of Florida for the first time, and their first event in Ohio was already sold out. But I also predicted the network would struggle to reach 1.1 million subscribers by the end of this year. And here we are in January, and they've already beaten a million, so they haven't passed that 1.1 million number I said, but I think it's a safe bet they will very soon, so good on them. That's still a far cry from the 3 to 4 million that Stephanie McMahon and George Barrios recently said they see themselves hitting. And it doesn't excuse their poor booking of the Royal Rumble match, but I doubt they care very much right now what you and I thought of the Royal Rumble. And for everybody citing this as evidence that the cancel, you know, the hashtag cancel the WWE Network movement on Twitter was a bust, first of all, I never thought it was going to make any sort of significant dent anyway. But we need to keep something in mind here, and one of our listeners, Romit, who lives in India, brought this up to me, and it's a very valid point. He was one of the people who canceled his subscription after the Royal Rumble, and he noted that his subscription still runs through February 12th. Now, this was before they announced the free month, so I don't know how that might change things. Romit now may have his subscription extended for the entire month of February, but February 12th, that's what it said. So technically, he is still a network subscriber until that date, even though he canceled. I would love to know how WWE is counting these numbers, because it's very possible they're counting however many people ditch their network subscriptions. And again, I don't think it's a significant enough number to make a huge difference. I don't think we're talking about 50,000 or 100,000 people. But I would love to know how they calculated that number, and if those people are included in the overall tally. I'm guessing they are. And I'm not doubting they hit the million. That's not really the question here. What I would like to know is how they got to that number, and that's something they have not shared, at least not yet. Triple H is going to be on Stone Cold's podcast on the WWE Network after Raw this Monday night. It was so successful with Vince McMahon, they're doing it again. And actually, after they did the one with Vince, I think on the Sound Off, I even said, Steve's got to get Triple H on his show next. And sure enough, he's got Triple H on, and I'm looking forward to that a lot. I have three questions that I wrote down here that I'm hoping Stone Cold will ask Triple H when he interviews him on Monday night. Three questions. Question number one. While guys like The Shield and to an extent the Wyatts have done well since making it to the main roster, although you could argue most, if not all, of those guys are FCW guys, not really NXT so much. But, you know, Roman Reigns is about to headline WrestleMania. Despite their success, there have been a number of NXT talents that have been called up to the main roster and have had very little success. They are not headlining WrestleMania anytime soon. I would ask Triple H, why do you think that is? Does that bother you? And can you really lay all of that on the talent themselves? Because this is the biggest illustration to me of the difference between Vince McMahon and Triple H. And I'm sure he's not going to throw his father-in-law under the bus, but I want to hear the question asked in some form because I think it's a valid one. Question number two, and this is more of a out of personal curiosity, what was the nature of Triple H's conversation with Kurt Angle when he reached out to Triple H recently? Why is Kurt Angle not in WWE right now? You know, when those stories popped up recently about Angle reaching out to Triple H, not liking what he heard, going over his head to Vince, it just read that Triple H was against the idea of bringing Kurt back. I'd like to know if that's true, and if so, why that is. And number three, and maybe the most important question of all, how does Triple H answer as an executive in this company? One who has input into the creative process to an extent. How much so, we don't really know. How do you reconcile that reaction at the Royal Rumble? I know they kind of addressed it in storyline on SmackDown this week when he mentioned controversy coming out of the Rumble. Forget storylines, okay? I want to know how he reconciles that reaction at the Rumble. And I don't want to hear him put all that on the Philadelphia crowd, which supposedly that's the tack that WWE is taking. It was all the Philadelphia fans. That's why that happened, okay? I don't want to hear that. It's a bullshit answer. I want Austin to put him on the spot, let him explain the thought process behind that Rumble match and how it played out. You can't do a podcast with Austin a week after that debacle that we saw and not put him in the hot seat and ask him about it. So those are the three things I would like Steve Austin to ask Triple H. You know, it's way more important for me, I think, to hear him answer questions like that. It's way more relevant than, you know, asking him, did you hold guys down back in the day? And you know, why Booker T at WrestleMania 19? Why? And questions like that. I mean, maybe they'll get asked, maybe they won't. To me, that doesn't matter. It's more relevant to ask questions like this, and hopefully he will. Hopefully Austin will, and it will make for a very interesting hour, I am sure, after Raw this Monday night. Speaking of Raw, let's get into Raw. Raw this past Monday was live from Stamford, Connecticut. Not Hartford, Connecticut, as it was originally scheduled to be. This was a show that was done from WWE World Headquarters, as they call it. And let me tell you something, they dodged a bullet. They dodged a major bullet by not being in front of that live crowd on Monday night, because they would have eaten them up alive. And it made for a great show. It was the first time that Raw had ever been canceled due to bad weather. They did have that one In Your House show that got knocked off the air due to a bad storm. And the only time I think Raw itself was ever canceled before was due to the Benoit stuff. And they put a 3-hour Chris Benoit tribute show up, which just looks really bad looking back on it now. But that's it. So Vince McMahon did the job for Mother Nature on Monday. And by the way, so much for this so-called snowpocalypse that was supposed to sweep through and kill us all. You know, New York City ended up with 6 inches. Fuck's sake. I mean, if you would have told Mandingo to lay down flat on the ground and think happy thoughts, he would have been taller than the amount of snow we had on the ground here. It's pathetic. So what we ended up with was, Rumble match aside, because they did replay both the championship match and the 30-man Rumble match from the night before. That aside, this was one of the more enjoyable episodes of Raw in a long time. They did the replay stuff, and people are upset. Yeah, if you paid for it, how could you do that? You know what? They were put on the spot. It was a tough situation for them to be in. So I can't really sit here and fault them for it. Because, you know, if that were me, I don't know. If I had 3 hours of TV time to fill, and I've only got a few hours to figure out what the hell I'm going to do because I can't have any actual matches, I probably would have done the exact same thing. It just is what it is. Now, in between the replays of those matches, they aired sit-down interviews with Seth Rollins, Brock Lesnar, and Paul Heyman, Daniel Bryan, and that was the biggest thing I liked about the show. It forced them to shake up the format, which that show badly needs. It's needed that for the longest time in the worst way to be shaken up in some way. I mean, you could set your watch to when certain things are going to happen each week on Monday Night Raw. You know the show is opening with a promo, likely an authority promo. You know when they're about to go to commercial break because they wait until someone's been thrown out of the ring. You know what they're going to say before they go to commercial break. Raw rolls on. I mean, the look of the show, the feel of the show, it's so formulaic. And here, there really was none of that. You know, there was also no fans. It's not like you can do this every single week. But those sit-down interviews were just infinitely more effective than any in-ring promo in front of the live crowd would have been, especially in front of that crowd in Hartford, what would have been that night. I've been saying this for years now. Even a few months ago, when people really started to turn against Bray Wyatt's promos, they started giving him the what treatment, which they weren't doing before. I said he should have been backstage doing a sit-down, or if not, backstage cutting a promo with the crowd noise cut out. He's not The Rock. He doesn't need to play off the crowd and the millions, and then you hear the fans. That's not what Bray Wyatt does. He doesn't need the interplay with the fans. You can cut the crowd noise out, and it would be just fine. He can get his point across without having people in the background, just ambient background noise or people heckling him. So I thought every single one of these segments were effective in making these guys seem more human and giving us a reason to actually care about them. So thumbs up on that. They opened the show with Michael Cole and Booker T live from their studios in Stamford without JBL, who they instead dispatched outside on the roof of Titan Tower to give us a weather report. He was not very happy about being out there in the freezing cold. Neither was I when they invited him to come back inside. I would have left him up there for the rest of the show, but that's me. They then re-aired the awesome triple threat match from the Rumble. Who knew it would take an act of God to get them to open Raw with an actual match and not an authority promo? If you missed this match, then I don't know what to tell you. You missed out because they gave it to you for free on this show. And when it was over, I felt like I had robbed them by not paying for it again. That's how much I enjoyed that match. I mean, seriously, if you would have quit watching Raw when this match was done airing, you would have watched the single greatest episode of Raw in history. It was great. But the show did go on. We had Michael Cole and Seth Rollins sit-down interview. Rollins dropped a Phoenix Splash reference in reference to the wacky move he did on the pay-per-view. That is what the move is called, but this is WWE, so you never know what name they're going to end up giving this, you know, this sort of thing. That maneuver, I thought, was probably a safe bet, but he did call it the Phoenix Splash. When Cole told Rollins that Brock Lesnar was coming out next, he said, I'm going to stick around. I think I'll stick around for Brock. So Heyman and Lesnar come out next. Brock tells Rollins, you're sitting in my chair. Rollins says to him, well, yes, it appears I am. And then he proceeded to knock the chair over and walk away. Brock just stood there smiling, amused by the whole thing. Such an awesome, subtle, chicken shit heel move by Seth Rollins. He's not like an overt chicken shit in that he'll just run away from people all the time. He does have these flashes, like with Brock, where he'll get up in his face, he'll stand up to him. But I just thought this was such a subtle chicken shit heel move on his part. It was just fantastic. He didn't run away from the guy, but it was just very childish the way that he did it. So then we had our Heyman-Lesnar interview. Brock referred to himself here as a steamroller, told everybody to stay out of my way, people. And then came the best part, which was Lesnar very casually talking about how he would like to meet the guy, that guy being Roman Reigns, who was coming up later. And he said, I think I'll stick around. Roman Reigns, sit-down interview with Byron Saxton. He talked about his father, Sika, of the Wild Samoans, trying to teach him how to swim when he was a little kid. Sounded more like he was attempting to drown young Roman, by the way he described this story. He basically threw him into the deep end of the pool, and Roman was left to scratch and claw and fight his way back head above water before he drowned, basically. They went through his whole family history. He talked about carrying on the Samoan legacy. Talked about the crowd reaction to him at the Royal Rumble in Philly and how the fans paid their hard-earned money to boo and cheer whoever they want. I was enjoying this until this part. This was the part of the interview where he just came off like a John Cena clone. And you could say, well, what else is he going to say? Is he going to heel on the fans? Is he going to tell the fans to go fuck themselves? Of course not. And that's true. But we've heard John Cena say that so many times in interviews, off camera, on television. All I could do is sit here and look at Roman Reigns saying this and go, they are making him John Cena 2.0, and this will fail. This will not work. So I didn't like that. Aside from that, I thought he did a good job. He still has those awkward pauses, but he'll get better. Because now he's going to get more promo time now that he's the guy, right? The spotlight is on him. They threw him into the fire. He's going to have to find his way out of it, and I think he will. So I thought this was actually pretty good. He said he was looking forward to confronting Brock Lesnar later on in the show. For the people who have been asking, I did listen to the interview he did with Sam Roberts and his line about how the company's going to do what the company's going to do, the fans are going to do what they want to do. In the end, I'm still the one getting rich. You know, talk about being miscast as a babyface. But that's not even what bothered me. What bothered me, and I like Sam Roberts, and I understand he's got his hookup with WWE. He doesn't want to jeopardize that. He doesn't want to bite the hand that feeds him. So there's certain things he won't say. There's certain places he won't go. But I was really disappointed when he did not challenge Reigns on that nonsense about how critics have no right to critique because they don't know how to do a lockup. These people wouldn't know how to do a lockup with me if they got inside the ring. That's what Roman Reigns said. That is such a bullshit argument. You've never laced up a pair of boots, so therefore you have no right to talk about what we do. The Super Bowl is this weekend. And there are lots of people on television, there are lots of people on radio, talking about nothing but the Super Bowl. Talking about the strengths and the weaknesses of the Patriots, the strengths and the weaknesses of the Seahawks. And not all of these people have played in the NFL. Does that mean they don't have a right to critique and talk about the game? Sports radio would cease to exist if guys like Roman Reigns had their way. And I would love to know how many guys in that WWE locker room listen to sports radio or sports podcasts. With all the traveling they do, they're always looking for things to listen to. And it makes sense because these guys are constantly traveling by car, by plane. You don't think those guys listen to sports radio? You're out of your mind. This is no different. If you are bothered by the criticism, that's fine. But don't use the, oh, the people wouldn't know how to lock up with me if they tried. And then Sam Roberts just agrees with him and says, yep, those people would have urine on their pants if they ever tried to lock up with you. Instead of doing the right thing, which would have been to very politely push back and say, okay, Roman, devil's advocate here. And then use the sports talk analogy and see if he still feels the same way. If he does, it could make for interesting radio, if nothing else, just to hear why. Why he doesn't think it's the same thing. But nope, he just caved and gave him a pass. That's what bothered me more than anything else about that interview. Nobody asks follow-up questions. It's like they're too afraid. They announced that at the Fastlane pay-per-view, John Cena will battle Rusev, I presume in a non-title match because it's the U.S. title, and, well, it's the U.S. title. And here's how they're explaining the match. Here's the great setup to this match. They said the Authority had planned all along to have this match at WrestleMania, but they were bumping it up a month early. Oh, really? Had John Cena won the WWE Championship the night before, we're supposed to believe it would have been Cena and Rusev, I guess, title for title, at WrestleMania. This explanation was way too convoluted. I mean, just like the pull-apart at the Rumble post-show where the Rusev had the audacity to interrupt a John Cena promo. Oh, no! So, I guess that spells the end of the Ryback-Rusev feud. They had one match on TV. It wasn't even for the title. I suppose they could give Ryback another shot. They could have maybe him cost Rusev the match with Cena if it's non-title, cost him his first win, then take the title from him at WrestleMania. Or better yet, you know, maybe have Rusev actually beat John Cena at Fastlane and then have Ryback take the title at Mania. Do they have the balls to do it, though? And if they're doing Cena-Rusev at Fastlane, then what the hell does John Cena do at WrestleMania? So here's what I predict. I predict a cheap win for Rusev at Fastlane, with John Cena getting his revenge at WrestleMania, whether it's for the title or not, and ending the streak. I've said it all along, it's going to be Cena. This whole storyline was designed, this whole character was designed for John Cena to be the hero in the end. I would be stunned if they had the guts to go with anyone else. I hope I'm wrong. Also, at the next pay-per-view, Triple H will call out Sting for a friendly chat. They re-aired the Royal Rumble match. It was even more baffling to watch it back a second time. I still can't believe how badly they screwed that up. And the stuff they did with The Rock, I mean, they actually thought that would work. They actually thought that would mitigate the reaction after Bryan went out. They're clueless. Completely clueless. And so, for the second straight year, their cluelessness has ruined one of my favorite events of the entire year. It's to the point now where my fear is that the fans are going to go into the Rumble next year expecting to be kicked in the crotch and just waiting for any opportunity to crap all over that match. And that sucks. That really sucks. We learned that Arnold Schwarzenegger will be inducted into the celebrity wing of the WWE Hall of Fame this year. He once punched out Triple H on an episode of SmackDown, and he guest hosted Raw last year. He had absolutely zero impact on WWE business, but it's the celebrity wing. It doesn't matter. Actually, Triple H is being inducted into Schwarzenegger's International Sports Hall of Fame next month. That's the same weekend they're doing that NXT house show, so it sounds like a case of you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. The WWE Hall of Fame, everybody. I still wish they'd put Cyndi Lauper in, though. You can't put Mr. T in there and not have Cyndi Lauper. I mean, they have to correct that at some point. Dean Ambrose showed up at WWE headquarters claiming to have hitchhiked there from Hartford, which is where Raw was supposed to be taking place. Well, at least if he ever ends up in TNA, he'll be used to the travel arrangements. He didn't really say much of anything before wandering off to look for posters of himself. Renee Young had a sit-down interview with Daniel Bryan. He said the Rumble loss was on him, and he let everybody down. He doesn't hate the fact that Roman Reigns won. He hates the fact that it wasn't himself who won. There was an interesting line, and I have no idea if this is leading to anything or not, but even though he was putting it all on himself and said it wasn't Roman's fault, he deserved it, he worked hard, they did have him throw a line in here where Bryan said, "Now granted, I didn't have The Rock helping me. It wasn't WWE that fed me as a kid, but Roman Reigns took advantage of the situation, so good for him." That's basically what Bryan said. So a very interesting line to have in there. But he basically did what he could in this promo to take the heat off Roman Reigns, which is not going to work, no matter how hard they may try. And you know what? If they wanted to use Daniel Bryan to help deflect some heat away from Roman Reigns, then they should have done what I suggested in my Rumble wrap-up. Don't eliminate the guy 15 minutes into the match. Keep him in there until the end, and then when it's over, have him shake the guy's hand, raise his arm, and have Bryan be the one to endorse him in the middle of the ring. Not The Rock. Don't have him do it after the fact in a sit-down interview in a studio somewhere. Do it at the Rumble. I mean, they're very lucky. They are very lucky. Vince McMahon should get down on his knees and blow a snowman, because had it not been for that blizzard, Bryan would have been in front of 10,000 people cutting that promo, and I doubt his endorsement of Roman Reigns would have gone over very well in front of those people. I did love that they finally had Bryan acknowledge for the first time since he came back that he was never actually beaten for the championship. He is the uncrowned WWE champion. He had it taken away from him. Better late than never, I suppose. But I want to say something here about Daniel Bryan. I'm going to go into rant mode here for a second. They have known since at least mid-December, if not earlier, that he was coming back from injury. He is one of your most popular performers. Again, in storyline, the uncrowned world champion. He's still getting massive reactions. Doesn't seem to have skipped a beat as far as his in-ring work is concerned. Here we are heading into WrestleMania. The main matches are becoming clearer and clearer each day. Roman Reigns against Brock Lesnar. Possibly John Cena in a rematch against Rusev. Bray Wyatt and The Undertaker, most likely, if Taker comes back. Sting against Triple H is a lock. And that leaves maybe Rollins and Orton, who have unresolved issues. Orton's not back yet. He should be back any week now. So they've got some unresolved issues. They could settle them at WrestleMania. At best, that leaves Bryan fifth down, maybe sixth down, on the card. That is completely ridiculous. And so WWE now has Bryan and Dolph Ziggler lobbying each other for a match on Twitter. That's not an accident. That is the planned match at this point for WrestleMania. Your opening match, I'm sure. And I have no doubt that those two guys can go out and steal the show. But Ziggler's another one. He and Sting were the stars of that Survivor Series match. And he really seemed to be building some serious momentum as a top guy or a near the top guy for the first time. And someone on Twitter pointed out that they realized the only reason Dolph Ziggler even got that moment at Survivor Series was because Roman Reigns was out injured. And I never really looked at it that way, but that was kind of like an eye-opening moment for me. I don't know why, I just never looked at it that way. And the guy's absolutely right. This was never about pushing Dolph Ziggler. This was about filling a hole until their boy came back, and you could tell by the booking of Ziggler since then. And so, for Ziggler, hey, this would be a great spot to be in at WrestleMania, and he deserves a feature match somewhere on that card, not just to be in a shoehorned into a meaningless battle royal that, frankly, I think Mizdow should win. You know, would I prefer Bryan Ziggler over Bryan Sheamus, which is a match I think they wanted to do last... I know they wanted to do it last year. They've done it a million times before. Yeah, I would take Bryan Ziggler over Bryan Sheamus, largely because it's not completely run into the ground. Bryan and Ziggler have had matches in the past, but not to the point where you're just completely sick and tired of seeing it. But, you know, I'm sorry, you can't sit there, if you are one of these people, crying about Bryan and Sheamus and, oh my God, I don't want to see that match, this is terrible, but Bryan versus Ziggler, ooh, oh my God, this is awesome, this is going to be great. The end result is the same. You can't complain about Brian Sheamus and not complain about Brian and Ziggler. Now, if you are not complaining about Brian and Sheamus and you don't give a shit, then you got nothing to worry about. But I see all these people who were so bent out of shape at the prospect of Daniel Bryan being relegated to a match sixth down on the card with Sheamus, who isn't even back on TV yet, but somehow Dolph Ziggler and Daniel Bryan in the same position. Wow, this is going to be great. This is awesome. These two are being treated like an afterthought. Like an afterthought. They're taking the two internet darlings and they're saying, okay, we're going to give the internet fans what they want. And here you go. It's like giving a dog a treat. Good boy. Good boy. Patting you on the head. That's what they're doing here. You know, with Brian, they were handed a comeback story. The guy was gone for 9 months after neck surgery. Didn't know if he was ever going to make it back to the ring. He finally does, and the guy is an afterthought heading into the biggest show of the year. Steve Austin comes back from injury, wins the Royal Rumble, goes on to WrestleMania to win back the championship. Great comeback story. Triple H comes back from injury, wins the Royal Rumble, goes on to WrestleMania to win the championship. Great comeback story. John Cena comes back from injury, wins the Royal Rumble, doesn't win the title at Mania, but still, nice little comeback story. Edge comes back from injury, wins the Royal Rumble, also doesn't win the title, but again, they went with the comeback story. This should have been easy. The Seattle Seahawks are in the Super Bowl this weekend. Daniel Bryan, big Seahawks fan, he took over the team's Twitter account for a Q&A, and the NFL then tweeted about it to its 9 million followers. The NFL does a better job of putting over Daniel Bryan than WWE does. The final segment was Paul Heyman asking questions to Roman Reigns, sit-down interview with him and Brock Lesnar, who was just there hanging out. I thought this was excellent. I thought this was the best thing on the entire show. This was the best thing they could have done to try to drum up some real interest in their WrestleMania main event, which is not going to be changed. I mean, I know there are stories that have leaked that WWE is adamantly against changing plans. Now they're forging ahead. The moment that Royal Rumble match was over, I knew they weren't changing plans. There was no way they were going to do that 2 years in a row. They have their WrestleMania main event. That's it. So it's Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, whether you like it or I like it or anybody likes it. So you may as well make the most of it and really try to build up some intrigue. And I thought they did a tremendous job here. They had Heyman talk. He was very polite to Roman Reigns, and he said, I know your family longer than you know your family. And I took pictures of Yokozuna back when he was first starting out, his first publicity shots, and I remember seeing, you know, Rikishi back when he was the Samoan SWAT team, and I managed him in the NWA, and talked about all these things. And then he brought up the match between Brock and The Rock at SummerSlam in 2002, and he said, I'm sure you remember that epic rematch on pay-per-view between Brock Lesnar and The Rock. He goes, actually, you don't, because there was no rematch, because The Rock never asked for a rematch with Brock Lesnar. And I just thought the way that Heyman delivered everything, it was just masterful. Heyman, I said this on Twitter, is a goddamn promo sorcerer. When he's on his A-game, which is almost all the time, this guy is a wizard. And he really made this segment feel very special. And it ended with Roman Reigns telling him, I'm not going to answer to you, I'm going to answer to Brock. And he turned face-to-face, sitting in a chair with Brock. He told Brock, I'm going to beat you at WrestleMania, I'm going to take your championship, and if I don't, I'm going to take a piece of you with me. And Brock stood up. There was a tense stare down between them. Brock said, he pointed at Heyman, he said, he might respect you, but I don't. And then Reigns said, you know, after WrestleMania, but you will. And Brock walked off, and that was the segment. So I thought this was just fantastic. Again, I love this. I thought this was the best that Roman Reigns has looked in any sort of a promo environment. You know, even the promo he did earlier in the show, it sounded very rehearsed, and I didn't like the fact they tried to make him that, you know, at that one point sound like John Cena. But even that was light years ahead of any promo he's cut on television in the last month. So this was a good night for Roman Reigns. I don't think it would have been such a good night had they been in front of 10,000 people. So they really lucked out, I think, by having a studio show. And so what do you do at Mania? Everyone's coming up with their fantasy booking scenarios. The way I look at it is this. We still don't know what's going to be with Brock Lesnar. Is he going to stay? Is he going to go? I still think he's going back to UFC. That was my prediction late last year. I'm going to stick to that. But I think, you know, a scenario that works, Heyman turns on Brock at WrestleMania. He was awfully nice to Roman Reigns in the segment. He was very respectful to him. And as Heyman said in the promo, and you could tie this into an eventual turn if you want to, he managed a lot of guys that were, you know, part of that Samoan family and helped them out in different ways and has that connection to the family, so he has a lot of respect for them. And Heyman, of course, can see the writing on the wall. The Beast is, you know, going away, or the Beast has other interests, or he sees a weakness in Brock. He sees Roman Reigns as the next big thing. That's his new meal ticket. However you want to explain the turn, but Heyman turns on Brock, aligns with Roman Reigns, who wins the championship at WrestleMania, but in doing so, turns heel. I guess almost like a double turn, if you want to call it that. And I think it might just be the best thing for him. It could end up turning Rollins, by default, who still has that briefcase, into a babyface. And now Rollins, who I think, again, long term, is much better off as a babyface, like Dean Ambrose is much better off as a heel. Roman Reigns is much better off right now as a heel. And a lot of people have been circulating that video of him from NXT. I saw that video, you know, a year ago. That's not new to me. But I got to tell you, you know, that was in NXT however many years ago. He was cutting a promo in the back. Sounded fine. Even that promo sounded better than any promo he has ever done in the ring on television as part of the Shield or now as a singles guy. And that was years ago in NXT. So he's got that potential in him. It sounds to me, between that and the interview he did with Roberts and some of the, you know, Sam Roberts and some of the comments he made, like this guy is a natural heel. He is a natural heel. And that coupled with all of this backlash against him, why not use that to your advantage? Why not do the double turn? Why not have Heyman there as a mouthpiece for him? And like I said, when you do that turn, if Rollins still has not cashed in yet, by default, it almost makes him into a babyface. And you got Daniel Bryan, you've got Dean Ambrose, you've got Randy Orton, you've even got John Cena. All of them would give Reigns a whole bunch of opponents to keep busy with for the rest of the year. If babyface Roman Reigns wins at WrestleMania and then Brock goes away, so now Lesnar is gone, what kind of heel challengers does Reigns really have? Bray Wyatt? Maybe, I guess Bray Wyatt? Rollins? It's very thin. On the heel side, on the babyface side, he can have a ton. He can have a plethora of different challenges on the babyface side. And I feel like we're in this period now, as far as turning Reigns heel, I feel like we're in this period like we were with The Rock after SummerSlam in 1998, when he had that great ladder match with Triple H, and the fans turned him babyface. And for 3 months, you had Rock and Austin on top, as the top babyfaces in that company. But then they turned him corporate at Survivor Series, and they built to an eventual match between Austin and The Rock. I feel like we may be in that same transition period with Roman Reigns right now, where he's a babyface, but he's also really a heel. People just haven't figured it out yet. So I think that might be the direction they're going in, the double turn with Heyman at WrestleMania. No matter how predictable all of a sudden they may think it is, oh, everybody sees that coming, it doesn't matter. That's the best course of action, I think, for him. Unless they want to turn him before Mania, but I think that would be a mistake. You've made a commitment to this guy as your top babyface. I know people are already cheering Brock Lesnar. They turned Brock Lesnar babyface the week before the Royal Rumble. I thought it was a one-night thing. But then you look at the way he was booked in that Rumble match, he was booked like a babyface. Not just the fact that everybody was cheering him. They did that one spot where Rollins did the elbow drop, took him out of the match. So in the final 2 minutes of the match, Brock Lesnar makes this valiant comeback like any babyface would. And he wins the match. So I guess I look like an idiot. Sure as hell looked like he was booked like a babyface that night. Now on Raw the next night in studio, he was almost like a prick. So I don't think they've officially turned Brock babyface. But now you're going to have everybody cheering the guy. And if that's not the desired reaction that you wanted, then I don't know why the hell they did what they did. So Lesnar's supposed to be the heel, but everybody likes him. Roman Reigns, you know, the reactions, to say they're 50-50 might be generous. It's not all boos, and some cities may be kinder to him than others between now and WrestleMania, but it's not looking too good. And at WrestleMania, okay, I don't care what happens on Raw between now and then, every city they go to, Fastlane, I don't know what Roman Reigns is going to be doing at Fastlane. Maybe they'll have him put his WrestleMania title shot on the line. Maybe that's part of Triple H's announcement on Raw this Monday. But when you get to WrestleMania, you're talking about the hardest of the hardcores are going to be part of that crowd. People from all over the world are traveling to see WrestleMania. That's why you get such a wild crowd on Raw the next night. You get them in a smaller building so they sound a lot louder. You know, it's harder for them to come through in a 80,000-seat stadium. But these are the hardest of hardcores. People from the UK and Ireland, all over the world, are coming in for WrestleMania. It's not looking good for Roman Reigns in that main event if their expectation is that he's going to be cheered as the babyface hero. But I think you just stay the course. You made your bed. Now you got to deal with it. You could do the turn at WrestleMania and come out of this better than you were going into it. That would be my suggestion to them. Now, SmackDown on Thursday night, for all intents and purposes, was basically our Raw this week. It was the only real show they had. I did watch it, most of it. I did skip certain parts. Triple H came out at the beginning of the show to make a big announcement. He said that on Raw this Monday, he will make an announcement that will shake WWE to its core. This is coming off what he called the controversy in the Royal Rumble match. He didn't talk about what that controversy was, so my gut tells me it's going to have something to do with Curtis Axel. He's trolling all of us. Curtis Axel, who got attacked before he could ever even get into the ring at the Rumble. Eric Rowan took his spot. He never got into the Rumble. He never was eliminated. You know, you could say Curtis Axel is the uncrowned winner of the 2015 Royal Rumble, so I could envision a scenario where Triple H, being Triple Troll, trots out Curtis Axel as the uncrowned winner, and he makes a match, either for that night or at Fastlane, between Roman Reigns and Curtis Axel. He tries in some other way to stack the deck against Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns, in the end, will win. He'll keep his title shot. He'll go on to WrestleMania. That's what I'm thinking the announcement is. There was somebody on our Facebook group suggested that maybe they're going to bring back the World Heavyweight title and let Dolph Ziggler and Daniel Bryan feud for it on SmackDown. Number one, no. Number two, that wouldn't make any sense, because this announcement is supposed to have something to do with the controversy surrounding the Royal Rumble. If we look at this from a worked point of view, okay, and they're not going in and out of kayfabe here, there is no controversy. There is no controversy. I mean, the crowd did not like the fact that Roman Reigns won. But Roman Reigns won, fair and square. Daniel Bryan got eliminated, fair and square. Dolph Ziggler got eliminated in 2 minutes, fair and square. Where is the controversy in that? So from a storyline perspective, that doesn't make any sense. As far as bringing back the World Heavyweight Championship, like I said, no. No, 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 no. I waited years for them to merge those two titles because there was no point in having two titles. And they finally did it, and I was grateful for it, and I think the company is much better off for having one defending champion, that being Brock Lesnar. So you're going to bring back the world title to placate all the people who are pissed off that Daniel Bryan is not in the WrestleMania main event. It goes back to what I said before about the whole Bryan-Ziggler match, right? You're like a dog, and they're patting you on the head. Good boy. So we'll give you a treat, and you can go off and let the big boys do their thing. I don't want to see the World Heavyweight title brought back. The roster is as thin as it's ever been in terms of star power. You could just look at that Royal Rumble last week and holy shit. I mean, look at the guys they trotted out there. 80% of that Rumble match was a bunch of losers that nobody cares about. Kofi Kingston, Titus O'Neil, Zack Ryder, fucking Adam Rose. Bunch of other losers that they shoved in that match. You're going to split the brands and put those two guys in a meaningless championship match that will no doubt open the show, which is what they were doing with the world title almost every year anyway. They were putting them in as curtain jerkers to open the show. No, I have no interest in seeing that at all. If the roster were stronger and more beefed up, and there were a lot of guys who I could say, God, you know, these guys aren't getting enough TV time. These could be top stars. They could really benefit the way that a guy like Edge did when he took SmackDown on his back all those years ago. Times are different now. There is no need for a brand split because these people don't know how to do a brand split. So until there are new people in power, which is not going to happen, there's no revolving door of leadership in this company. It's one family. It's their company. They do with it whatever they want. They don't know how to do a roster split, nor do they have the roster for it. I hope that's not what that idea is. I don't think it is. But I saw that, and in a different era, that'd be a really fun idea. This is not the time to do something like that. Also on SmackDown, we had Roman Reigns against The Big Show, as if we haven't seen enough of that. I thought the crowd was actually nicer to Roman than I thought they would. I mean, there were a lot of boos, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't like overwhelming boo this guy out of the building type heat. And it was a live show on whatever 7-second delay there may have been, so it's not like they were piping in cheers. I didn't think it was as bad as I thought it might be, in fairness to him. The match itself, you know, it was okay. I just have no interest in seeing Roman Reigns against The Big Show anymore. Main event was Daniel Bryan and Kane in a casket match. I will say that this was probably the best casket match I've ever seen. That's not necessarily the highest of praise, because I can't think of any really good casket matches that I have ever seen. And I'm not counting even the Shawn Michaels Undertaker one from the Royal Rumble in 98, where Shawn wrecked his back, and then he was gone for 4.5 years. Because I didn't think that match was any good either. As a matter of fact, of the three matches Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker had at the end of 97, beginning of 98, I thought that was the weakest of the bunch. I can't off the top of my head think of a really great casket match that I've ever seen. So this is as close to a great casket match as you'll ever see. It was basically just a regular match. It was, every Daniel Bryan Kane match you've seen, they let this one go on a little bit longer. The crowd was totally behind Bryan. They did this nice sequence towards the end where they built drama of who's going to fall into the casket, and the fans were into it. I mean, that was the whole thing. The fans were buying it, and they were cheering, no, when Bryan was going to be locked in the casket, and they were going crazy for it. So kudos to both guys, Kane and Bryan, for pulling that off. I enjoyed it. I don't have to see another casket match for another few years, but they did it, and it wasn't a complete disaster. It was actually very good. So I enjoyed what I saw from SmackDown. The stuff in the middle, I didn't really pay too much attention to. I did see the segment with Rollins, and then they sent out Ryback to accept the open challenge, and Ryback got attacked by J&J Security. Eric Rowan came out. Nobody cared. Dolph Ziggler came out. Somehow, all three guys, Mercury, Noble, and Rollins, managed to get away and escape from these three baby faces. These guys look so stupid by allowing them to flee. This segment did nobody any favors. It just felt like, we have to get these guys in the show, so let's come up with a way to do that. They did it, and it sucked. So I didn't really think much of that, and the rest of it was just filler. So that was SmackDown. Let's talk about the WWE 24 special on the network. I caught that when Raw ended on Monday night. It's part of a new series they're doing. They're only half-hour shows, but it's more of a backstage, behind-the-scenes kind of look at WrestleMania, the making of WrestleMania. So this one was about WrestleMania 30. I enjoyed it a lot. Not quite on the same level as the Ultimate Warrior documentary and stuff like that, which that was an hour. This was not as good as that. I was disappointed there wasn't more on the Undertaker stuff. That's how they sold this whole thing. They were really selling it. I didn't expect them to show us Undertaker's carcass laying on the ground backstage when he collapsed in the back after his match with Brock Lesnar. But at least have comments from the other wrestlers, something about the streak being over. I think they had a very quick reaction shot from like Bret Hart and Tyson Kidd, but that was it. It would have been nice to at least show them or go up to them and get comments from them on what they thought, because everybody, I'm sure, was legit blown away when that happened, when Brock beat The Undertaker. They didn't have any of that. They didn't do any of that at all. All they did, they had that clip that you've seen in the commercials of Vince McMahon in the gorilla position saying, I need some help! And then a bunch of people and John Cena, they all go to help, and that's it. So I thought that was a bit of a letdown, because that's how they lured you into this special. They made you think there was going to be more to it than that, and there really wasn't. But that aside, I did enjoy it. Now, the story coming out of this, and it shouldn't be a story, I just told you people a few weeks ago. I ran through a whole bunch of Hulk Hogan lies. I do that every now and then on the Sound Off because it's funny. It's entertaining to go through the list of blatant lies that Hulk Hogan has told over the years. A few weeks ago, he did that podcast with Chris Jericho, and I reviewed some of what he said here on the Sound Off. And one of the things that he said was, at WrestleMania 30 last year, Vince McMahon, who has a history of messing with him, so for example, Vince and Andre did not fill in Hogan on the fact that Hogan was going over in the WrestleMania 3 main event, which is complete bullshit. I don't believe that for a second. That's what Hogan claims. Well, Hogan claimed that at WrestleMania 30, it was a similar circumstance in that they didn't tell him what was going to happen when he went through the curtain. They didn't tell him that The Rock was going to come out and Stone Cold was going to come out because they like to mess with him. Vince likes to mess with him. Well, unfortunately for the Hulkster, brother, in this special, they show a lot of footage backstage of Hulk Hogan with Stone Cold Steve Austin, with The Rock, before he went out there for the opening segment of WrestleMania. He knew exactly what was going to happen. He knew exactly who was coming out and when, I'm sure. So Hogan got caught in a lie, blatantly, on video, lying about something he just told Jericho only a few weeks ago. Hulk Hogan tells a lie, and the sky is blue, grass is green, and water is wet. Really cool to hear, according to PW Insider, that the early merchandise sales for Kevin Owens have been huge. WWE was caught off guard. They were very impressed by how much he has sold so far. On the other hand, we have a guy getting over without WWE's help. Uh-oh. I can't help but hear that and just think, you know, mayday, mayday, swarm, swarm. Only in wrestling could you be worried when somebody is actually successful. NXT this week opened with Wesley Blake and Buddy Murphy beating the Lucha Dragons, upsetting the champions to become the new NXT Tag Team Champions. Match ended with Kalisto doing the Salida del Sol on Buddy Murphy, but Wesley Blake had gotten the blind tag only a few moments before. He got in as Kalisto was pinning Murphy, rolled him backwards into a pinning position not unlike the one Owen Hart beat Brett with, that little cradle out of a victory roll at WrestleMania 10. And with Kalisto's shoulders on the mat, he got the pin. Wesley Blake did, and just like that, new tag team champion. So these guys have not exactly been on a winning streak. They've had a few wins here and there. Largely, they've just been around to lose to other teams. This was nice in that it was different. Nobody saw it coming. You don't see title changes out of the blue like that on NXT very often. And so these guys, I think, have a future. They've got great chemistry. They've got a good look. Two big guys. They look alike, but they're not related as far as I know for the people who have asked me. They're not brothers. So this was cool. I really liked this a lot. I wasn't really digging the Lucha Dragons. Nothing against Kalisto. I mean, Sin Cara, I can't get behind Sin Cara. I mean, the guy's been such a bust. He's a talented guy. He's not the original. It's Hunico under a mask. Hunico's very talented, but the Sin Cara character is just completely dead and stale to me. Kalisto has a lot of potential, I think, on his own. But Wesley Blake and Buddy Murphy, at a time when we are lacking, I think, in some new tag teams on WWE's roster, at some point, maybe in the not-too-distant future, these are two guys, as long as they keep working together, they don't split them up the way they seem to have split up Ty Dillinger and Jason Jordan, which was another young team they put together on NXT and they've done nothing with. These guys, it looked like they're doing something with. Buddy Murphy is a guy who comes from Australia. One of you guys, I wish I remember who it was, told me a long time ago. I remember when you angrily sent me an email on the Sound Off maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, telling me that Buddy Murphy had signed an NXT contract and they were calling him Buddy Murphy. I forgot what his name was down in Australia. But when this person found out they were giving Buddy Murphy the name Buddy Murphy, he flipped his lid. He says, he sounds like a somebody from a cop movie. That's not the name you give this guy. I'm telling you, I've seen this guy wrestle. He's a killer. He's really good. We've seen flashes of that from Buddy Murphy. He's a very athletic, big guy. I don't really mind the name so much, but it is one of those things that could handicap you going forward. Buddy Murphy, not exactly the most intimidating name, but they could always drop the Buddy part and just call him Murphy. Didn't TNA have somebody called Murphy at some point? I feel like they did. Wasn't it like Gunner and Murphy? Maybe I'm just imagining that. Anyway, first round tournament match to crown a new number one contender for the NXT Championship. We had Adrian Neville beating Tyson Kidd with the Red Arrow. In between their entrances, Neville came out first. He was in the ring when Tyson Kidd was about to come out. There was a static disturbance on the screen. Almost looked like a test pattern. That lasted maybe all of 5 seconds. It was clearly a tease for the impending debut of Solomon Crow, the former Sami Callihan. It even said Solomon on the screen briefly. So all I want to know is, when am I making my NXT debut? Now, it's about time we saw this guy, and it looks like he may be using the hacker gimmick after all that he had all those months ago. It was said, supposedly, that Triple H was not a fan, and they were going to drop the hacker gimmick. So either those reports were premature, or with hacking kind of being the big thing now in the news these days, maybe they decided it was a relevant gimmick. So whatever the case may be, he is on his way in. I think they should let this go for a while. I feel like to debut him, for example, at TakeOver next week, which I don't think they will do, but I feel like if they wanted to, it would be too soon. This was the first vignette. You know, let this go on for a few weeks. Anyway, this was a great match. You know, Tyson Kidd, I've said it before, I'll say it again. For everybody who says they love Tyson Kidd, he's still very underrated. I think he is such a valuable part of that roster. I mean, right now he's doing the tag team thing with Cesaro. They're really making themselves a nice tag team that people are getting behind on the main roster. Maybe they'll end up with the titles at some point. But he can do that, or he can go down to NXT and work with these guys. Work with the newer guys and hang with them every step of the way and have a freaking great match. I mean, you can put him almost in any situation, and he will come through. He's one of the MVPs in that company right now. So these two guys had a great match. They've got great chemistry together. There was one brutal spot where Neville gave Kidd a sit-out powerbomb, okay, a Batista bomb, basically, and it looked like he broke Kidd's neck. Just, it looked like it sucked to be Tyson Kidd. But Tyson kicked out, and the match went on. I thought Kidd would pull it out, and you'd have Bull Dempsey and Baron Corbin maybe go to a draw. Tyson Kidd advances to the finals to meet Finn Balor or Hideo Itami face versus heel. Or Baron Corbin wins his match and just completely obliterates Tyson Kidd in the semifinals. But to my surprise, Adrian Neville went over clean here in this match. And then in the post-match interview, Neville referred to the unknown announcer who came into the ring to interview him. It was the same guy from last week that was backstage talking to Kevin Owens. He referred to the unknown announcer as Greg. That's our first clue into who this guy is. And so, armed with this new information, I hit the Twitter, as Chris Jericho annoyingly calls it on his podcast. The Twitter. I don't know if that's more annoying, or Bully Ray, who used to call it the fire-breathing Twitter machine. But in any event, I went to Twitter to see if I could find out who this guy is and found out his name is Greg Hamilton. Still have no idea where he came from or what his background is, but at least now we have a name. Charlotte and Bayley went to a no contest with Team Bay. Is that the way it is, Bay? I had people browbeating me. I think I called it Bay. B-A-E. Oh, heavens. How could I be so wrong? Apparently, it's Team Bay. What a stupid name. Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch, that's what I call them. That's who they are. Sasha spent a good part of the match attacking Bayley's injured knee. Charlotte got the hot tag, busted out a figure eight, but Becky broke it up. Sasha then hit her move on Charlotte, but when Bayley tried to break it up, she accidentally landed on her partner Charlotte. Charlotte and Bayley got into it at that point. Sasha and Becky got involved, and the ref just threw the match away. So this was to build to the women's Fatal 4-Way at TakeOver. Backstage, Finn Balor talked about his match with Hideo Itami next week. Itami then walked up to Balor and said, I brought you into... Why am I doing the Rusev accent? I brought you to NXT and I will take you out. All I can say is, it is a good thing these two men can wrestle, because it's sure as hell not going to be carried by their promos. Emma is back. She says things didn't work out too well for her on the main roster. Yeah, no shit. She says next week it's her and Carmella again. You see, to me, NXT is like a toy factory. They make really nice toys. Some are shinier than others, but they're all good. And Vince McMahon is like the big kid who, the minute he gets that new shiny toy, he does everything in his power to break the fucking thing. He throws it against the wall. He stomps on it. Some toys are durable enough to survive the abuse. Most of them, though, end up right back at the toy factory for repairs. They have to fix the damage that was done by this deranged man-child. That's how I look at NXT. In the final first-round tournament match, Baron Corbin once again made short work of Bull Dempsey with the End of Days, although this time it went about 2 minutes. They fought to the floor. Finally, they made their way back into the ring. We still haven't seen Corbin sell anyone's offense yet, but, you know, slowly but surely they're having him do more. You know, go a little bit longer. Now he's cutting promos. I still think they have something with this guy. And I pitched the idea months ago, if they want to do it, if they want to debut somebody new the night after WrestleMania, which they've done before, not every year, but Mankind made his debut the night after WrestleMania back in 96. Brock Lesnar, the current WWE champion, debuted the night after Mania 18. They've done it even in recent years. You know, Lord Tenzai, that didn't work out too well, but he debuted the night after Mania in Miami. Paige debuted on Mania last year, the night after, or on Raw, the night after Mania. So if they wanted to debut somebody new and have him make a statement and have him make an impact, if they had the guts to put Rusev in the ring with John Cena once, twice, maybe at Mania, and have Rusev win, and he's still undefeated, and then have Baron Corbin come out, maybe answering an open challenge, and have him finish off Rusev in 30 seconds, and let him take a big guy like Rusev up and give him the end of days. That would look pretty impressive. The only drawback is you'd have to keep the U.S. title on Rusev if he doesn't lose until then. It's kind of hard to take the title off him if he's still undefeated. And I really don't think that putting the U.S. title on Baron Corbin or any new guy would actually help them at all. Those titles are like poison. I want to keep those belts as far away from these guys as humanly possible. So maybe it's non-title, open challenge kind of thing. I don't know. But I would still be in support of that idea if they wanted to debut somebody new and have them make an impact. And if Corbin was the guy to beat Rusev, that'd be a hell of a way to make a statement right out of the gate. You know, he's a big guy. They like that. Is he ready? That's the question. I don't know. I have not seen enough from him still. There's a couple of months. Maybe we will see more at these tapings over the next several weeks. But he may not be ready. That's the only drawback. I mean, I guess you could always do it with a guy like a Sami Zayn, but you're not going to do it with Sami Zayn now because Sami Zayn is the NXT champion. So unless Kevin Owens beats him, then you could do whatever you want, I guess, with Zayn and maybe have him be that underdog who comes out and answers the challenge and gets a fluke pin maybe on Rusev. You could always do it with a guy like him. God knows Sami Zayn belongs on that main roster. But when I look at Corbin and I think of a scenario like that, his name comes to mind. But the key would be to keep Rusev undefeated. People thinking, okay, this guy's going to lose at Mania, then he doesn't. But then the very next night, he finally loses. I kind of like that story. I was shocked these two guys didn't go to a draw because now we have Adrian Neville against Baron Corbin next week. That will be a very interesting visual, as small as Neville is in height compared to Corbin. I like it, though. It's a different match we haven't seen before. Backstage afterwards, Corbin was cutting a promo on Neville when Bull Dempsey interrupted. This guy just won't quit. He says that's twice now that Corbin has gotten lucky, but it will not happen a third time. And in response, Baron Corbin pie-faced Bull Dempsey and walked away, while Bull just stood there seething. So that means Bull, no doubt, will interfere next week and cost Baron Corbin the match, probably giving him his first loss if that happens, which means we might actually end up with Neville against Balor in the finals, after all, assuming Balor beats Tommy next week. You know, and I said last week, that's the match on the indies all those years ago that earned Adrian Neville a contract, was Adrian Neville when he was Pac against Prince Devitt. So we could come full circle here and have a match between these guys in WWE very soon. Triple H was impressed by that match so much that he signed Neville. That was how Neville got signed. So anyway, they can try to replicate it now at NXT. I hope they do it. I certainly would not be against a Finn Balor-Adrian Neville match in the finals of this tournament. Final segment was the contract signing between Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. William Regal, the commissioner, was in the ring to oversee things, and the stipulation was that neither guy could touch the other, or else the match would not happen. So there was a lot of tense staring between the two of them, and Regal went to have Owens sign the contract, and Owens looked at it, and he backed off, and he said, "I'm here to fight, but I've got a family to feed. I've got, you know, two kids at home, and I want the championship." And Regal was not happy about this. He says, "You know the rules here. This was non-title. You've done nothing to earn a title match." Sami Zayn piped up and said, "Just give it to him. Put the title on the line. He's not going to sign unless he gets it. I want him. The fans want it. Make it a title match." And Regal agreed, maybe a little too easily, but nonetheless, Regal said okay, and he amended the contract, made it a championship match. I gotta tell you, maybe I shouldn't have been surprised, maybe I'm just naive. I actually thought they were doing an untitled match at the show. And I was okay with that, because I figured that meant this thing was gonna be drawn out for a while, and they could have like a wild brawl, not worry about the belt being on the line if they want Owens to beat Zayn, and not have him lose the championship so soon. He hasn't even defended it one time yet. So, yeah, maybe they'll do a non-title, it'll build to a title, and it didn't bother me, but I guess they can't bring themselves to headline a special, whether it's a WWE pay-per-view or even a live NXT show in this case, without having a championship match. So it is now officially for the NXT championship. Kevin Owens signed the contract. He then flicked his pen right at Sammy and his paperboy hat, his beret, and walked off. And that was it. But you've got to watch the segment to really appreciate it, and the tension, these guys just burning a hole in each other, staring at one another. Kevin Owens is so awesome. I mean, he just carries himself like a star. And I kind of joke, it's really only half joking when I make comments like I did earlier. Oh, he sold a lot of merchandise. Uh-oh, that's not good for him. You look at the way a lot of these guys end up. You hear a lot of the stories about the mentality of the people who run that company. Sin Cara, the original Sin Cara, when he came in, Sin Cara was the John Cena of Mexico for years. That's how big of a star the original Sin Cara as Místico was down in Mexico. And they brought him in. The guy was a star. Now, did he have a bad attitude? Did he have a chip on his shoulder that rubbed people the wrong way? Maybe he did. But I remember reading, things aren't looking good for Sin Cara. He walks around backstage like a star. Oh no, can't have any of that. Can't have a guy that's confident in his own abilities. They frown upon stuff like that. So Kevin Owens, as an established independent star, as an established star elsewhere, comes to WWE. Heaven forbid if the guy walks around like a star. I don't know if he does or not. I hope he knows how to play the game. He seems to be all, you know, buddy-buddy with Triple H. I would hope that works to his benefit and not his detriment. I don't know how he walks around backstage at Full Sail. But when this guy is on TV, he carries himself like a star. He doesn't have a bodybuilder physique. He's not the biggest guy in the world. But it doesn't matter. He doesn't have to be. He's got something that a lot of guys don't. I don't want to compare him to Brock Lesnar because they're two totally different people. But he has, in a lot of ways, what Brock Lesnar has. He's got that aura about him that makes him so much different than anybody else on the roster. And I don't know if a guy like Kevin Owens, back in the Attitude Era walking around, I don't know that you and I would be singing this guy's praises. He might just be another guy. Maybe we would only be focusing on his physique back then. What's so special about this guy? He's overweight, blah, blah, blah. But because everybody these days, like very few people have any sort of really unique quality about them. A lot of guys are so similar. They look similar. I mean, it was worse a few years ago when they were churning out guys that just every freaking guy out of developmental looked like the next John Cena or Randy Orton. It was crazy. It's not as bad as it was then. But that's what makes Owens stand out. We know he's a good worker. If you've seen his matches before, he's a good wrestler. But it's that aura about him that makes him so much different than anybody else they have. That is where his real star potential lies. The question is, once he gets that call up, whenever that may be, does Vince McMahon see him the same way? Does Vince McMahon even know who the hell Kevin Owens is? If the guy's moving merchandise, I would assume by now he does, because I'm sure Vince gets those reports. But does Vince even really know who this guy is? Has he seen his work? What does he think about Kevin Owens? I would be afraid. I would be genuinely afraid to know what Vince McMahon thinks of Kevin Owens. Triple H obviously likes the guy, or he wouldn't have brought him in. But I wonder how much input, how much knowledge Vince McMahon himself has about these guys. Owens, Neville, Balor, Itami. I know he's met them. It's not like he doesn't know they exist. But does he look at them the same way Triple H does, and Dusty Rhodes, and all those guys that they work with constantly down at Full Sail? It doesn't matter. Everybody could love Kevin Owens. They could think he's the next big thing. It doesn't matter. All that matters is once he gets to TV that first Monday and Vince takes a look at him, that's the only opinion that matters. So I worry for the guy as a fan of his work. I think I have a reason to be worried. And I hope when his time comes, Vince and whoever, Michael Hayes, all those guys, they really realize that they've got something special in this guy. This guy could be a top heel in the company for years to come, and that top heel eventually gets so popular that he can then turn around and become the biggest babyface. He could be one of those guys that gets, you know, years on top in that company if they play their cards right. So far, so good. And if you've never subscribed to the network before, if you did but you were one of the people who canceled, do yourself a favor, sign up for the network, get the free month. It doesn't cost you anything. You get Fastlane too. Who gives a shit about Fastlane? You want to see this NXT show. If you've never seen NXT before, you're missing out. This is going to be a hell of a first show. You can get it for free. Take my advice. Sign up. Take advantage of it because you're going to see some special things on this show. And NXT is one of the few shining beacons about this company now. There's a reason why Reddit sent Triple H a fruit basket in December. And my, how times can change so fast. Think about that. They send him a fruit basket in December. And by the end of January, by the time that Royal Rumble was over, they wanted his head on a platter. That's how quickly things can change. But that's also the big difference between the main product right now and NXT. Even in a dull, average week, NXT is a far better wrestling show than they will put on most weeks. Raw this week, studio show, not bad. Actually, pretty damn good. Most weeks, it makes you want to pull your hair out of your head. The Royal Rumble, I'd be bald if I pulled all my hair out of my head after how that show made me feel. NXT, I promise you, you will not feel that way. Take advantage of the free month. Check it out. I know you're going to like it. Thank you guys for taking time out of your day to listen to The Sound Off. I get questions from people asking, how can I support the podcast? Well, the best way to support the show is simple. Just keep listening each and every week. Keep spreading the word about it to friends and family and retweet or share links to the episodes on Twitter and Facebook. But beyond that, you can contribute by making a PayPal donation or by signing up for a free 30-day trial of the Audible.com service. Making a PayPal donation is simple. Just log on to thesolemonster.com and you'll see the PayPal donation box on the right-hand side of the page. Enter whatever amount you'd like and click the Make a Donation button. That's it. Or sign up for a free Audible trial by entering our custom URL, audibletrial.com/solemonster. From there, you can sign up free for 30 days, which helps us out. You get one free audiobook as part of your trial that you get to keep no matter what. You can browse through their library of over 150,000 titles. Listen to your books at home, on the commute to work, at the gym, whenever, wherever. Sign up at audibletrial.com/solemonster or visit thesolemonster.com to make a donation right now. And thank you for supporting The Sound Off. Impact this week was the first of the two shows that Brian Blade and myself went to. I'm pretty sure I went through most of the results for those shows a few weeks ago after the tapings, but real quick rundown of what happened on Impact this week. Lockdown. They announced Lockdown for next Friday. It will feature a Team Angle versus Team MVP main event. The Hardys will also challenge James Storm and Abyss for the tag team titles. That's the match where Hardy takes that ridiculous bump that I'm sure everybody has seen by now. Now you'll get to see it actually on television. Tommy Dreamer showed up for his monthly beatdown on Impact, trying to talk some sense into Eric Young for turning on his best friend Bobby Roode. Eric Young ended up laying out Dreamer with a pile driver. This was brutal to watch at the tapings because Dreamer is heavier than he used to be, and so Eric Young had a bitch of a time getting him up for this the first time before he finally hit the move. To sell how crazy he is, EY then beat up a stagehand at ringside after this, so they're going all the way with heel Eric Young. Bram and Magnus met at a bar to reconcile their differences. Bram was very upset the week before Feaster fired when he perceived Magnus taking his briefcase away from him, and Magnus tried to explain, listen, I have a tag team title shot. You're my tag team partner. And then he showed Bram a picture of his kid, his newborn kid, and all seemed to be well, and of course, Bram turned on Magnus, beat the crap out of him, hit him in the head, actually hit him in the back of the head with a cue ball from a pool table, seemingly concussing him and knocking him unconscious. Jeff Hardy beat Abyss in a Monsters Ball match, delivering a sunset flip powerbomb onto a pile of thumbtacks, one of which nearly took my eye out at the tapings, and then finished him off with the Swanton Bomb. If I never see thumbtacks used in a wrestling match again, I will die a happy man. These matches do nothing for me anymore. I am completely desensitized to them. Every time they come to New York City, like clockwork, they have to have a hardcore match. Nails and weapons and tacks, and I'm surprised I haven't used fire yet. Probably get kicked out of the building if they did. So these guys beat the hell out of each other. They had a good brawl. I'm just completely desensitized at this point to these kinds of matches, at least in TNA. I feel like in other organizations, like in New Japan, right? If New Japan Pro Wrestling had this blood feud that they were going to pay off between two guys on their roster, and they were going to do it in some kind of a hardcore weapons rules type of match, which they wouldn't do, but if they did, I feel like it would be a lot more effective, because I can't think of any gimmick matches that I've ever seen in New Japan. I mean, has New Japan ever had a cage match? I'm sure they must have, but you don't see matches like that very often in New Japan. You know, even WWE. Now, WWE has some pretty stupid gimmicks. They just had a casket match on television. Yeah, they'll bust out some silly gimmicks every now and then. But even WWE, I mean, when was the last time you saw a truly hardcore, no-holds-barred kind of match that had thumbtacks or anything even remotely close to that, right? It's been a long time. So I feel like in WWE, if they were to do something like that, you know, it still wouldn't do much for me, but it would be kind of unique. TNA just goes way overboard with it. They just go way overboard relying on that kind of stuff. And seeing guys get powerbombed on top of thumbtacks to me is just, it's not worth it. You know, it's just, it's not worth it anymore. Bobby Lashley pinned Austin Aries with a spear in a Fatal 4-Way main event to retain his TNA World Heavyweight Championship. The match also included Bobby Roode and MVP. Good match. Eric Young ran in to drag Roode out of the ring at one point, threw him into the barricade. Apparently, they're saying now Eric Young is a member of the Beatdown Clan. I mean, no shit. He's been a member since day one. I've been saying it for weeks. It just took this long for TNA to finally figure it out. When somebody walks out with you for practically every single segment and they participate in almost every single beatdown, they are a part of your crew. After the match, Samoa Joe and Kenny King ran in to beat up Lashley and Aries when Kurt Angle and Gunner ran down for the save. Roode challenged EY to a cage match next week at Lockdown. Angle wanted Lashley to be on his team, but Lashley said he would never be on Kurt Angle's team, which means, well, you know what that means. One last TNA note here before we move on to Lucha Underground. TNA went and posted a major spoiler on their own website this week. They are over in the UK taping several weeks' worth of Impact. So if you don't want to hear it, and you didn't go to the Impact Wrestling website and make the mistake of doing so, and you just don't want to know what happened, skip ahead. But you've probably heard it by now anyway. Drew Galloway, the former Drew McIntyre, made his Impact Wrestling debut doing a run-in at their tapings in Glasgow, Scotland. He went after the Beatdown Clan. Interesting that he and his ex-wife, Taryn Terrell, are now working for the same company after things went so horribly wrong for them in WWE. In fact, that was what put him in the doghouse after he got that big push initially. He was the chosen one, right? He was Vince McMahon's chosen one, and he was the Intercontinental Champion. And long after Taryn was gone, McIntyre was never pushed again as anything but a joke in that company. So I think this could turn out to be one of those pickups that WWE regrets, or should regret. They may not care, but they should regret it down the road. Kind of like EC3, in that they had a guy who was very talented, didn't know what to do with him, never gave him a chance, and they went somewhere else, and they got even more over, and they became a bigger star because of it. I think that reflects poorly on WWE. EC3 is the biggest example of that I can think of. And depending on how long he signed for and what his involvement is going to be, and from what I've seen of him and the work he's been doing over in that ICW promotion over in Scotland, I mean, this guy could be a pretty big guy for TNA. And it's some new blood, and I'm sure he's motivated after what happened in WWE. He's motivated to show people that he's better than being part of a three-man band and show WWE that they missed the boat on him. I hope he does. I hope he does. I hope they do something with him. If you are a Dish Network subscriber, you now have the El Rey Network, channel 253, which means you now have access to Lucha Underground. So you've been missing out. Now's a good time to catch up on things. One of the best wrestling shows on TV this week was episode 12, opened with a match between Phoenix and Mil Muertes, a much bigger man than Phoenix, and ended with a shocking win for Phoenix. Basically, Mil Muertes was beating the hell out of him, getting a whole series of near falls. He went to deliver a superplex, and as both men hit the canvas, Phoenix put his legs up to cradle Muertes, even though Muertes had just delivered the move. He got the pin, and Mil Muertes was not happy when this match was over. Second match was Arjenis, Superfly, and Aerostar against the crew, Castro, Mr. Cisco, and Bale. I can't say enough good things about this match. This was maybe the longest match, certainly the longest six-man match, and they haven't had too many of them. But this was one of the longest matches I've seen yet on Lucha Underground. Maybe not the longest. They let these guys go for a long time. It was, back and forth, although the meat of the match really had the heels just beating the hell out of Aerostar. Poor Aerostar was getting the shit beaten out of him here in this match. But just a really fun match. I think everybody, certainly on the heel side, but everybody got a chance to shine in this match and get their time in to do some stuff. And in the end, the crew got the victory with their 3D into a Codebreaker finish. So Cortez, Cisco, and Bale pick up the win. We then had a pre-recorded sit-down interview with Vampiro, who was with Conan and Prince Puma. We have not heard Prince Puma speak, and I wonder if that's kind of the gimmick here, because the perception is that Prince Puma is this great luchador from Mexico. Of course, Prince Puma is Ricochet, who I think was born and raised and may still live in, Kentucky, I think, which you would never think if you looked at the guy. I would never guess he was from, Kentucky or Oklahoma or any place like that, but he is. So every time he would go to speak, Conan would cut him off and do the talking for him. This got Vampiro very upset. The two of them almost came to blows. Of course, there's a lot of history there between Vampiro and Conan going back many years. But you could see the seeds were being planted here that Conan would not let this poor guy speak. And there were seeds of discontent between the two of them already being planted. We then had the main event, which was Prince Puma defending his Lucha Underground Championship against Cage. And you see these two guys in the ring together, and the size disparity is just enormous. Cage is a monster of a man. Gas to the gills. I mean, that's his gimmick, right? He's a big, strong, tough guy. But they had a good back-and-forth match. It was kind of like a big-man, little-man match. I like matches like that. One of the reasons why I would have loved to have seen Lesnar and Bryan, and I kept harping on that so much, it wasn't just who was involved. I like matches like that. So I thought they had a good match. I mean, this was only Cage's, second match, I think, since being in Lucha Underground. And what didn't make a whole lot of sense to me, unless the story they're telling is that this guy just doesn't care. He's kind of a human wrecking machine, or his temper gets the best of him. But he was fighting for the championship. And Puma goes up to the top. He's going for his 650 splash. Cage gets up and kind of shoves the referee into the ropes, and that causes Puma to crotch himself on the top rope. And then a few moments later, he blatantly kicks Puma low for the DQ. So the guy is disqualified. He loses the match. Cage goes and he grabs Prince Puma, puts him in a... I don't even know how to describe this move. It was a very cool-looking move. I'm sorry, I'm busting out my Vince McMahon announce skills here. What a maneuver! But that's the only way I can really describe what I saw here. And that's the issue with Lucha Underground. I can't sit here and do play-by-play on these matches. I could tell you who won, who lost, how good and how bad it was, but you guys really have to find it and watch it for yourself to appreciate some of the crazy stuff these guys are doing. But the point is, Puma is getting just beaten down by this guy when this match is over, almost getting killed. And Conan comes out. Now, we have not seen Conan in the ring. We've seen him in these backstage segments with Dario Cueto and the sit-down with Puma behind the scenes. We haven't actually seen Conan get into the ring. And he looks ancient. I don't know if that's just part of the character or not. I know Conan, he's got a lot of miles on his body. He had a kidney operation, right? A kidney replacement operation years ago. So he's been through some tough times. But he gets in the ring. I think he broke his cane over Cage's back. Didn't really do much. And Cage turned his attention to Conan, knocked him down, grabbed the championship belt, hit Conan in the head with Puma's title belt. Then Cage literally ripped the championship in half. He made this title look like paper mache. Literally ripped it in half and just threw it down like a piece of trash. Conan did the blade job. He's bleeding all over the place. It was good. It was a good visual. And that's how they went off the air, making Cage look like this unstoppable monster out of control. Couldn't even keep himself calm long enough to win the championship. Got himself DQ'd. Killed Puma, killed Conan. What's going to happen next? For anybody who knows the results of some of the tapings, I don't read the results for the tapings in advance, really, for any of these shows. other than SmackDown, but that's more so because I don't usually watch SmackDown each week. I made an exception this week. But I do know somebody big made their debut at the Lucha Underground tapings a few weeks ago. I believe that person may be debuting on either the next show or the show after. I could be wrong, but I want to say it is this upcoming week. But if not, it will be very shortly that person will be debuting on Lucha Underground. So we're going to get some more names, a big name on the show. But Cage has clearly been positioned as the top heel, and he's only been around for a couple of weeks. So good on Lucha Underground for doing a good job so far in building this new monster heel up. It was another good show. I am sticking with Lucha Underground. Again, 12 episodes in, I'm thoroughly enjoying it. The show ended with a backstage segment. Dario Cueto is encountered in his office by, her name is Angela Fong, this attractive Asian lady who has been, they've shown her kind of in the crowd or up in the balcony watching over the last few weeks, alluding, oh, who is that, without actually telling you who it is. Her name is Angela Fong. She was looking for somebody. She was looking for somebody named Rotunza, I believe is how she pronounced it. And Dario says, I don't know who that is. You can go talk to other people if you want to. I mean, maybe they can help you out. And she left in a huff, probably not believing what he was saying. But we are now left to wonder, who is this woman? Who is this other person that she's looking for? And what's going to happen next? It was, you know, a nice little cliffhanger there at the end of the show. Dario Cueto continues to be my favorite performer, I think, on any wrestling show, maybe aside from Brock Lesnar. He's awesome. I mean, this guy, again, he's an actor. He's an actor from Spain that they brought in to play the part of the boss on this show. And he's great. He's just fantastic. I can't say enough good things about him and his acting and how he portrays the character. It's just phenomenal stuff. The best authority figure easily on any wrestling show anywhere in the world right now is played by Dario Cueto. And the best part about it is he doesn't overstay his welcome. He doesn't come out and cut 20-minute promos to open the show. They only have an hour, so they can only fit so much in. They have these very slickly produced backstage segments that they do with him, and he just knocks it out of the park every single time out. So if you have never checked out Lucha Underground and you have Dish Network now, again, Lucha Underground is available on Dish as part of the El Rey Network, Channel 253. Check it out. It is different than really any other wrestling show on TV right now, and I put it up there. I may not put it on the same plateau as NXT in terms of which do I like better. I'd go with NXT, but this is way up there. And if you're sick and tired of what you're seeing on Monday nights or even Friday nights, definitely give Lucha Underground a shot. All right, let's jump into your questions. Open the old mailbag here. You can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. That includes MP3 audio questions. Always include your name and where you are from. And if you are sending in an audio question, please have the text of the question in the email as well. That's very helpful to me. We do have one audio question here this week. This one comes to us from Scott in Saskatoon.
Hey, Solid Monster. Scott from Saskatoon here. My question is, with all the people saying that Brock Lesnar is only in WWE for a paycheck, which may be true, but there is no doubt that when he's on my TV, he puts in more passion into what he does than 90% of the entire roster. Every time I look at Brock, I see a man who is very passionate at what he does, whether it's UFC or wrestling or football, and busts his ass for that paycheck. Would you agree?
I think we need to be careful here and not mistake passion for intensity. Brock Lesnar is he's a very intense individual. He's very real. What you see is what you get. That doesn't mean he doesn't have passion for what he does, but I think to say that he's more passionate than 90% of the roster, who, unlike him, are actually there, you know, making their shots every single week, they're on the road every single week, I think that might be a bit unfair. I would say the percentage is high, but not 90%. I don't doubt that you do have a lot of guys on that roster who were very disenfranchised with their spot, you know, their spot on the card, and maybe they have lost their passion. Maybe they do just show up to collect a paycheck. It's got to be hard to make it in WWE, right? The biggest promotion in the world. Or to spend years down at NXT and finally you make it to the main roster and they do nothing with you. But at that point you realize, you know, you've invested all of this time, all of these years, just to turn around and quit. That's got to be a hard thing to do. It's hard not to blame them when they try and they try, and no matter how hard they try, they're looking at a certain level and there's little that they can do about it other than quit, like Justin Gabriel did. and go work somewhere else for people who will actually appreciate their talents. You know how many guys, Drew Galloway is another, who leave WWE or get cut and they end up finding their passion somewhere else? All of a sudden, wrestling to them is fun again. Brock Lesnar is a passionate guy. He's very intense. When he shows up for work, he's all business, no nonsense. That's what makes him so unique. And he does bust his ass for that paycheck. People can mock him all they want to for the fact that he works 4 or 5 times a year. But when he's there, there is nobody better at being a pro wrestler than Brock Lesnar. He'd lose to the Bunny if you paid him enough money. And you know what? I bet it would be the most entertaining thing on the entire show. Dylan says, was just listening to your Royal Rumble review. You are spot on about WWE mocking people who buy the network through traditional pay-per-view. I live in Australia, and while some of my friends have decent internet, my internet is horrible. And I tried watching 2 pay-per-views on the network last year, but both times it was just unwatchable because of lagging. So it's real nice of them to call me an idiot for spending $25 on it. Was I an idiot for years before the network came out and I paid the same price? They basically say anybody who bought pay-per-views before the network came out are suckers. That comes from Dylan. Jim from Chicago. On JR's podcast, Mark Madden was talking about how WWE still does not believe in Daniel Bryan. They obviously demonstrated this at the Royal Rumble. Do you believe that statement to be true? Yes. Yes, I do. Just watch the show. They believe in him to a point, to main event SmackDown against Kane every single week. But that's all. Even after he won the title at WrestleMania last year, which was the last thing they would have done if they had their way. They booked him to look like a loser in a shitty feud with Kane. I mean, goddamn, him and Kane, you would think these two were Siamese twins, the way they keep these two together. But I absolutely believe that. And in his email, Jim says that Mark Madden claimed, I guess in the same interview, that Brian is just happy to be working and doesn't take anything they do to him to heart. Do I think that things might be different if he demanded things of Vince the way that other top guys have in the past? Absolutely. Absolutely. Part of it is Brian's fault. He cannot be excused for all of this. Part of it is his fault. He deserves some of the blame. He's told the story of taking the ambition test that they give people and scoring lower than any guy in the company had ever scored before. He doesn't fight for it. I think the only time I've ever heard of any sort of story at all of Brian blowing up backstage was when he got hurt on Raw in that match with Randy Orton, which was the injury that started all of his neck issues. And Triple H told the referee in his ear, stop the match. And Brian was pissed. He went to the back. He almost came to blows with Triple H. They were yelling at each other back and forth. That's the only time I have ever heard of Daniel Bryan really asserting himself behind the scenes or being any kind of problem. Of course that's part of it. Think about it. Put almost any other top guy ever in WWE in that spot in the Rumble. Do you think Steve Austin would have allowed himself to be booked that way to come out midway through the Rumble and get tossed like a nobody 10 minutes later? Or Bret Hart? Or Shawn Michaels? They'd have pitched a fit. There's no way they would have allowed their character to look that weak. I mean, I respect Brian's lack of ego, I guess you could call it. But there's something to be said about needing to have an ego to be on top in these, you know, shark-infested waters because everybody wants everybody else's spot. Yeah, you hear these guys over the years talk about this. To be a top guy, you've got to be willing to stab people in the back and step on them and walk on them. I mean, what a great industry. Who would ever want to be? But you need some of that. You need that killer instinct, and that's part of Brian's problem, maybe, is that he lacks that killer instinct to put his foot down and say, the hell with this, I'm not doing this, this is stupid. And I get the impression that he's the kind of guy who doesn't do that. He just does what he's told, and that's it. So yeah, that's absolutely part of the problem. Nicolito George, there seems to be a lot of rumors flying around regarding a potential Ziggler-Bryan match. Although I agree with the general opinion on how awesome the match would be, I think it would make absolutely no sense. Chris Jericho will likely be back for a WrestleMania match, and he has expressed interest in working as a heel. So why not have Jericho put over Dolph Ziggler in a match at WrestleMania? The feud coupled with the match would be awesome and could catapult Ziggler into a deserved higher spot on the card. What do you think about a Ziggler-Jericho match at Mania? Oh, you mean the same way that Jericho's match with Fandango 2 years ago catapulted him to bigger things? Come on, don't be naive. I don't want to see that. I don't think Jericho's wrestling a WrestleMania anyway, unless he said differently on his podcast that I'm not aware. I don't see a spot for him. If you had Jericho and Ziggler instead of Bryan Ziggler, that's still fifth or sixth from the top. Why would Chris Jericho come back after that Fandango debacle to be fifth or sixth from the top? Why would he come back for a Mania match unless it really meant something? He seems to be happy working his little house show schedule. Let him work house shows as a special attraction, and that's fine. There's no room for him right now on the Mania card this year, so I don't see why he would want to rush back. Dan Hull over in England has an idea to salvage Roman Reigns. With the backlash against him, I think there would be some mileage as a whining heel in the same vein of Bret Hart in 1997. I would have him come out on Raw to progressively complain about the fans booing him for winning the Rumble. I'd have him saying he deserves to have the crowd's respect for winning last year or winning this year's Royal Rumble. He could have even mentioned how he was screwed over for a movie star in last year's Rumble and how he deserved to win. I would then have The Rock come out to tell him to stop complaining and that in order to earn the fans' respect, he should put his WrestleMania shot on the line at Fastlane in a match against Daniel Bryan. Reigns would then lose to Bryan at Fastlane to set up Bryan versus Lesnar at Mania, with Bryan winning. Reigns would then become angry with The Rock since he caused him to lose his title shot, and that would set up a Reigns versus Rock match at WrestleMania with Roman going over. What do you think of this idea? You know, I just got done emailing somebody else who asked about The Rock potentially wrestling at WrestleMania, Rock against Dean Ambrose, or you know, any number of guys. And I said I really was not interested unless it was a Legends match like Rock and Triple H. I wouldn't mind seeing that. That, you know, I think would be okay. But that idea that you just presented could work. I like that idea. And it sets up a heel Roman Reigns, who gets a big win over The Rock at WrestleMania, as Bryan's top challenger when Mania's over. They could run with those two for months after that. Maybe even trade the title back and forth if they wanted to. So I actually like that idea a lot. Frank from the Bronx. What was the story behind having both Bret Hart and Lex Luger winning the Royal Rumble match in 1994? Well, they had their double main event idea, I think, for WrestleMania 10. They were going to do two championship matches, but I had always heard, and it makes sense, the reason that finish went down the way it did was it was being done as a litmus test because Luger had been their chosen one. Luger was on a path to the championship at SummerSlam in 93, one of the all-time most ridiculous finishes to a match that they've ever done, ever. For a guy they were positioning as the next Hulk Hogan, they put him on a bus, the Lex Express. They sent him all over the country for like a month. He didn't see his home. And it built to a championship match against the evil heel foreigner, Japanese guy who seems to have a love for Samoa for some reason. And in the end, Lex Luger beat Yokozuna by countout. And they have him jumping up and down like he just won the frickin' Powerball jackpot. And all the baby faces come out. They hoist him up on their shoulders like their long national nightmare of having this evil foreigner heel champion is over. He won by countout. And Yokozuna was still the champion. Even as a kid, I thought that was stupid. But their idea was, Vince McMahon decided, let's hold off on this and we'll give Lex the big win at WrestleMania 10. It was too long. At that point, the damage was done. That's a long time to wait. You know, you got to go through September, October, November, December. A lot can happen. And the fans just didn't take to Luger the way they had hoped. I think even if Luger won the belt, the fans weren't going to take to Luger the way they took to Bret Hart. The fans liked Bret Hart. So this was a litmus test. Let's do a double finish where they both get eliminated. We'll do the deal where the referees are arguing, no, my guy won. No, my guy won. And then we'll have Howard Finkel make the announcement that the winner of the Royal Rumble, Lex Luger. And we'll play Luger's music and we'll see how the crowd reacts. They did it with Luger. They booed. They did it with Bret Hart. They cheered. And at that point, I think Luger's goose was cooked. And WrestleMania played out the way that it did. Luger couldn't even beat Yokozuna. Yokozuna went on to wrestle Bret Hart and he lost the championship. And they built that whole new generation era around Bret Hart. Luger never really got much of a push again after that. I mean, his biggest feud was with Tatanka at SummerSlam, who turned on him and made him look like an idiot. So that's why they did what they did. They actually listened to the fans. What a concept! Can you imagine? That was 1994. This is 2015. Back then, They went by the reaction of a crowd in Providence, Rhode Island, or wherever the Rumble was that year. I think it was Rhode Island. Now, they blame the crowd. The crowd's going crazy for one guy. They're booing the other guy. Oh, it's just Philadelphia. They don't know what they're talking about. Apparently, WWE favors Providence, Rhode Island over Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Somewhere along the way, their philosophy changed. But they gave the people what they wanted, and they took to Bret Hart, and he became one of the biggest stars ever in that company. Matt from Toronto has a question and wants to dive head-on into the race issue in WWE, so this is sure to stir up some debate. He says, I know it's a touchy subject, but as a black WWE fan, it's been pretty disappointing time to be following the product. Not only do I feel insulted by the general laziness of their booking, but I cannot look at anybody on the roster and feel like they are a positive representation of my heritage or my culture. Just look at how WWE's black superstars were used during Sunday's Royal Rumble. R-Truth comes out rapping and says, whoop, there it is, for no reason, only to go on to be a surrogate for Devon Dudley by virtue of the fact that they are both black. Then Kofi comes in and performs his obligatory Royal Rumble save spot, only to get tossed out literally seconds afterward, as if to say, go do one of your tricks, and then he uses the M-word, and then get the hell out of here. What's the point of doing those spots if he never lasts more than 10 minutes in the match anyway? And he looked as dour as I've ever seen him. He had no enthusiasm or energy, which is something he constantly brings to the table. It was sad, like they'd broken his spirit. Then Big E got a little bit of a run, but as far as time spent in the match, but he didn't really do anything at all. Finally, Titus O'Neil comes out and was eliminated within seconds. None are worth giving a damn about, and none are treated on TV like we should care. The New Day gimmick is dripping in racial overtones. The R-Truth gimmick is the most outdated and racist reflection of black culture, and Titus is useless. Darren Young maybe could have been something cool had he returned and they did something with him, but WWE seems to have no desire to use him in any way, even simply for the publicity he could bring, as the only openly gay superstar on the roster. To make matters worse, there aren't any black wrestlers of promise in the pipeline on NXT. Does WWE have a race problem, and should they be taking more steps to rectify this issue? Sure, I'll say it. WWE's booking of African Americans right now is repulsive. How's that for a statement? Especially when you think about what great reverence Vince McMahon seemingly has for Martin Luther King Jr. They pay tribute to Dr. King every year on Raw with a video. If he was alive today and saw WWE's treatment of its black stars, I mean, hell, if he was alive in the 80s and saw WWE's treatment of its black stars, he'd be protesting outside every show. At least they had enough sense on the network to take out the part of the Jive Soul Roll video that shows Slick eating fried chicken out of a bucket. They took that out. You know, I don't know that it is, I don't know that it's a latent or even an overt racism on their part, but you know what? Actions speak louder than words. These guys don't have to be in main events wrestling for the WWE title to have a meaningful role on the show, and right now they don't. Cameron gets her screen time on Total Divas. Naomi is off the show now, but Cameron is in there, so is Alicia, I think. So they have their token black women on the show. Just like some of the early WrestleMania posters had Mark Henry on them. Mark Henry! Mark Henry hasn't even been on TV in months. Why do you think he was on there? They wanted a token black guy on the poster. So they thought of Mark Henry, because they didn't have anybody better. The New Day. The New Day is the biggest disaster right now. They decided to take not one, but three black guys and do nothing with them. They managed to top themselves on that one. And the R-Truth stuff at the Rumble, I brought that up in my Rumble review. It was so obvious that Truth was only out there in that spot to be the poor man's Devon because, hey, he's black. Titus O'Neil, a complete waste on the roster right now. Why even bother doing that spot with him in the Rumble? What was the point? To set a new record for failure that they couldn't even do because it got botched? Darren Young, you mentioned his name. Darren Young went and produced his own comeback video when he was recovering from his knee injury. It was on YouTube. I remember watching it. It was not produced by WWE, but it looked very professional. He put it up there. I remember watching it and thinking, God damn, that looked awesome. And he changed his look. He ditched the afro with the comb in it. He grew some facial hair. And what has he done since he came back? He wasn't even in the Royal Rumble. No, they had him standing in the ring next to John Cena on Raw a few weeks ago. That's it. No promo, no nothing. This guy fought his way back from a potentially career-threatening knee injury, changed his whole look, his whole attitude, his whole demeanor, and that's how he was rewarded for it. 3 hours of television time to fill on Monday night, but no spot for Darren Young. 30 men in the Royal Rumble match. No room for Darren Young. We could fit the Boogeyman in there. We could fit all these other useless guys in there. Let's put Adam Rose in the Battle Royal. All of these people that just mean nothing don't have a spot for Darren Young. I don't even know if this was their intent. They haven't drawn any attention to it. But I noted after they shook up their announce teams a few weeks ago, and this may have been the first time I noted that we had two African-Americans represented on the two major announce teams in WWE. We've got Booker T on Raw. We've got Byron Saxton on SmackDown. So I guess that's a plus. At least until Vince gets tired of Byron Saxton and they boot him off like they booted off Tom Phillips. So yeah, they've got a big problem right now. But I don't know that it's blatant racism on their part as much as they're clueless. They're clueless on how to use most of the talent they have. I don't want to just call it a race issue or a black thing because that's not fair to guys like Wade Barrett and Cesaro and even Emma, who, last I checked, aren't black, but what they do have in common is that they're all foreigners. Barrett's from England. Cesaro's from Switzerland. Emma's an Aussie from down under. Come to think of it, every main event performer right now in WWE is American. They were born in this country. Cena, Lesnar, Rollins, Reigns, Ambrose, Orton, Bryan, Big Show. That's not a good look for a company with a global reach. That's pretty incredible when you really stop and think about it. So as much as there may be a race issue there, it actually goes so far beyond that. It is an indictment on WWE's ability to use its own talent. Now, if you're a main event guy, for the most part, you're taken care of. Maybe they'll de-emphasize you every now and then and emphasize somebody else, but it's almost like, I'll use this analogy, okay? They talk about this in this country. The rich get richer and the poor get poorer. The gap between the rich and the poor has never been greater than it is right now. I think WWE has the same issue. The rich get richer and the poor get poorer. If you are rich, if you are a main event guy in WWE, for the most part, you are protected. You are safe. Not that they'll always use you the right way, but you're going to be in that spot. You're in a good comfort zone there. If you're in the mid-card or lower than the mid-card, you ain't going nowhere. You are stuck. And try as you might, if you are not looked at being above a certain level, there's nothing you can do. Because once you're branded with that stamp, you're screwed. That's not right. Because there are definitely guys lower on the card who could be doing way better than they are. And it's all a matter of opportunity. And whenever I hear somebody say, these young guys today, you know, unlike the Attitude Era and days gone by, other past eras in the business, you've got to take the opportunity. You've got to make your own opportunities. And I always roll my eyes. And I've heard everybody say that. Everybody has, Steve Austin, Jim Ross, they've all at various points have made comments like that. And that may have been true in their day. That may have been true based on what they saw in their own experiences 15, 20, 30 years ago. I don't believe that's the same today in today's WWE, maybe elsewhere, but not in WWE. You can only do so much. You need to, at some point, have the company behind you. You need to have the company's support to go out there and get yourself over. Whether it was in a match or in a promo, I almost feel it was probably a lot easier to get over back then than it is now. Because back then, it wasn't all about, well, I need the company behind me. It's more, okay, let me think of what I can do here. And I'm just going to go out and do it. And if I get in trouble, I get in trouble. But if it works, I'm a made man. Now, you can't even do that. They make it so much harder. Everything now is so micromanaged, and there's only so much time on these shows, and everything's scripted, and here, you got to do this, and only do it this way. So you're a lot more limited in your creative freedom to be able to go out and do the things that, in your head, you think need to be done to get over. Can't do that. You got to do what you're told. To a large degree, unlike then, now you need the company behind you. You can't do it without their help. You can't do it without their blessing, without their support. And a lot of those names that you know I just talked about, whether it's Big E and Kofi or Wade Barrett and Cesaro. Is there a race issue there? You can make that argument, but it goes so far beyond that. There are so many different oppressed parties right now in WWE, regardless of what they look like. But absolutely, absolutely, there is a problem there. And I can understand why you would feel that way. And I'm sure there's a lot of people right now who are just like you who probably feel the same way. But that's why, you know, I'll come out and say it. You know, their treatment of African Americans, I think, is repulsive. But you know what? I find repulsive their treatment of a lot of guys in WWE. Last question here. This comes from Big Zeus in Washington, D.C. I recently watched the WWE Countdown focusing on the greatest tag teams of all time, and conspicuously missing from the top 10 were the Steiner brothers. What's the deal between WWE and Rick and Scott? The Countdown had the nerve to list the Rock and Sock connection and even gave an honorable mention to Lay Cool. How come the Steiners get hardly, if any, recognition on WWE programming? I didn't see it. I mean, is that true? Lay Cool? Can't be true. I don't know. I mean, I've not heard of there being any issues other than Scott Steiner has talked trash about Triple H when you know, he left the company. Maybe that has something to do with it, but lots of guys talk smack about Triple H when they leave the company. Road Dogg and Billy Gunn said some really nasty things about Triple H in their RF video shoot years ago, and they were welcomed back with open arms. So I don't know what else it could be. You know what, though? I can believe that. I can believe the ranking and everything you just talked about, because WWE.com did a list of the top, like, 50 greatest tag teams of all time a few years ago. And I remember the Steiners were way down there on the list, like 40-ish maybe. And Lay Cool was right around the same spot on that list. I don't remember if they ranked them ahead of the Steiners or behind them, but they were in the same ballpark. And I think they had Edge and Christian was number one, which I love Edge and Christian, but they're far from the number one greatest tag team of all time. I guess the lesson in there, when it comes to these countdowns, either on the network or on WWE.com, they try to get people talking. I think that the countdown stuff they claim is fan-voted. I don't know if that's true or not. You know, believe only half of what you hear when it comes to stuff like that. But certainly the .com lists are done just to get people talking and ruffle people's feathers, and they want traffic on their website. And I remember reading that list a couple of years ago and being very upset by it, and then I kind of stopped and said to myself, you're taking this way too seriously. This list does not mean anything at all. But I agree with Big Zeus in that the Steiners deserve more recognition than that. I would think if I made a top 10 list of greatest tag teams of all time, the Steiners would be on there somewhere, maybe lower in the top 10, if anything. Maybe not top 10, but 11 or 12, but probably top 10. I mean, when you look at their body of work in the NWA and in WWE, and then again back in WCW, they were a very successful tag team, and they had some very, very good matches. So to me, that's all the criteria you need. What was your impact? You know, what kind of body of work do you have? I'd put the Steiner's body of work up against any tag team today. That's for sure. So that's going to wrap up the mailbag. Keep emailing me your questions, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter, @solemonster is my handle. We also have a YouTube channel with tons of bonus audio, lots of sound off extra content on there, youtube.com/thesolemonster. Hit the subscribe button so that way when new videos go up, like my Royal Rumble review last weekend, actually on Monday it went up, you will be alerted and you can watch them instantly. So do subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can also make a PayPal donation to the show anytime on thesolemonster.com. The PayPal box is on the right-hand side. You can also check out the shirts we have in our store, prowrestlingtees.com/solemonstersoundsoff. We have like 15 different designs up right now. I'm sure you'll find at least one that you like. They ship all over the world. International shipping. You can pay by credit card or PayPal. So head on over there right now and show your support for the show. Again, my Super Bowl prediction, 24-20 New England. And I don't have any allegiance one way or the other. That's just, I got a feeling. I wouldn't bet anything on it, but I got a feeling. So enjoy the big game, as many of you I'm sure will be watching. That's part of the reason I wanted to get the show up a day early this week, because I figured it's all Super Bowl fever on Sunday. So enjoy the game. We will be back with a brand new episode next weekend. That'll be episode 368. I'm sure we'll have a lot of thoughts on the Austin Triple H podcast interview and whatever Triple H's big announcement is on Raw this Monday night as it pertains to Roman Reigns and the Royal Rumble and all that stuff. So, until then, be well, stay safe. Thank you again so much for taking the time to vote for us as Show of the Year in the 2015 Wrestling Radio Awards, and we will be back for more of the award-winning Sound Off next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
They give us the dreaded fuck finish. Lame, lame, lame. You want to do the finish where the guy gets DQ'd for kicking ass? How about not doing it with your Intercontinental Champion? How about that? Some of these matches will go 10, 12, 15 minutes only to get a fuck finish or no finish at all in the end. If WWE insists on fucking the fans over so many times, the least they can do is buy us dinner first.
Sala Monster sounds off.
Since 2007, the Sala Monster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Sala Monster sound off.